The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Australia win by 10 wickets in the first ODI against India, making us think they'll never lose again before losing two games immediately against India, thanks to all the usual suspects. The Brisbane Heat lose 10 for 36 in the worst collapse in BBL history, which at least makes it temporarily interesting before something good happens again. We've got England and South Africa, Ben Stokes, Magic, Ollie Pope, Under-19 World Cup, Ireland and West Indies, and some other weird tangents. Big Bash stars Bo Webster and Clive Rose join us for a conference call. And one hashtag AskTDSC this week comes in from Pez's LinkedIn. This is all thanks to Budgie Smuggler, of course, our very loyal and favourite sponsors, budgiesmuggler.com or budgiesmuggler.com.au, deciding on your preference. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Dave Edwards to my left and Sam Perry to my right, boys. Straight into it, Australia and India ODIs. In light of Australia's initial 10-wicket win, a demolition of the Indian side, can you guys specifically remember an enormous win or an enormous loss in your own playing days and how good or bad that felt?
Well, firstly, he goes to my left. Hello. Dave to my right. Hello. lovely to be here on episode number 106. And I like that the focus of this question is on Australia's win, despite losing the three-match series.
Yeah.
It's like most of our lives as well. I reckon I'd have a losing percentage of 66%.
That's specific.
Yeah. So, look, I remember, and I will focus on this, I remember an enormous win in under-11s.
Okay.
We scored Lane Cove, I was playing for, scored 250 in 50 overs against West Pimble, and then we bowled them out for 10. Mm. West Pimble under-11s were not a good unit at that point.
Were they rebuilding?
I believe so. Well, they did. Their opening batsman was James Arneman, and he was Slim Dusty's grandson. Still is.
Okay.
Very good fella, very smart.
When you said that name, I was thinking Jason Arnberger.
Yeah, he always... And Arnberger was playing around the same time. They were both kind of nuggety opening batsmen, except one was 10 years old.
Yeah.
The granddad
the other one was 27 and playing for Victoria.
That's right.
Slim Dusty ever
just moved over from New South Wales. Sorry.
Yeah. Slim Dusty ever come to any of his games?
Slim Dusty never came to my knowledge. We played in the Gordon Rep side as well, James. A lovely fella. Lovely mum.
Did you have a team song?
Afterwards, with Lane Cove under 11s.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, would you like me to sing it?
Not necessarily. Okay. Eddos, anything?
Oh, mate, these intro questions are really testing my short to mid-term memory loss, which is drastic.
Yeah.
I've blocked out a lot of memories.
Sure.
I mean, I'd probably have to go back to underage as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some huge victories for the private school under-11s and open age group matches, under-11s, under-12s.
Yeah.
A lot of 30-not outs back in the days when you'd retire.
Yeah.
I remember one game I retired at 30, you know, everyone hit 30, then I went back in, hit another 30 and retired again.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even remember what happened to the pathetic fucking team that we played against. But safe to say that, you know, they were demolished.
Some of those teams that you played against then, like how many would have played the next year, do you reckon, alone into adulthood? Do you know what I mean? Like, you would have ended a lot of careers.
I ended a lot of careers.
Yeah.
That's actually pertinent. Richard Hines, who helped get this podcast off the ground, wrote a piece recently about some changes that, you know, he or Cricket Australia are mooting around, like just avoiding these demolitions, mm-hmm. you know, in cricket so that people stay in the game. Mm-hmm. You guys have...
But there's always the argument, you know, these demolitions are good for the kids. Mm-hmm. It teaches them, you know, you have to be hurt in cricket.
They're definitely not good for them.
Richard's Twitter is actually just blowing up during the week because he was posting a story. He did a tweet about, like, someone was sledging. Richard was playing in the 6th-11 or something.
Yeah, with his son.
With his son, yeah, because that's why he's still playing. Because you always need a reason to be playing as well.
Yeah.
And then he wrote about someone who was sledging.
A whole team was sledging the 13-year-olds.
13-year-olds, yeah. And then someone replied with that, just like, well, what are they playing age group stuff for?
Yeah.
Playing their A group, playing their own age
was
group.
Was the person who wrote that tweet, like, John with, like, 8 numbers after his name?
Yeah.
Always is.
Egg for a profile.
Yeah, no profile.
Lowercase, no grammar.
His bio is just a list of the sports teams that he follows.
Correct, yeah. Breathlessly writing. Yeah.
Love the misso.
Yeah, that's right.
Sign of the
Holden.
Conservative.
Yeah.
Holden.
Hate PC Warriors.
Yeah.
It's a basketball team.
Yes, how good.
SJW, yeah.
I played a game For St Ives. It's okay. Would have been the same competition as you and won outright in a day. So, yeah.
Like we've all listed our wins.
Nothing funny about winning, though. Yeah. That's the problem. Okay, well, what's funny is about losing, and Australia lost a series this morning in India, underneath blue skies, I should say, in India, which was nice to see for the first time in months as an Australian citizen.
I can't handle the graphics, though, on that feed that we're getting. There's something about the italics.
Yeah, right.
Like I like the graphics package, everything to be bold and easy to read. I had to squint to read some of the stats.
And is that like the how names. The Australian test numbers originally were bold?
Yeah.
Plays control
B. Spoken about that. They've changed a few things on the typeface of the Aussie numbers on the back.
Well, they just got it out there, didn't they? And then they've been tweaking as they go. So I guess that's a good way to
operate. Something. But what about that first win? Like you just woke up in the morning and Australia won by 10 wickets.
Yeah.
The fucking purity of that.
I walked down my street with an Australian flag on my back.
Yeah.
I just felt happy that day.
It was like days of old, reaching over, grabbing your phone. I described it earlier this week as devastatingly sexual. My whole body released some fucking full endorphins.
Semen.
Upon seeing it, your words. And they can never tell the difference between these three blokes. He goes to that. So it was great. Just none for this. It was so holistic. It was a reminder of the days of old. It was like, and Steve Waugh presented Labuschagne's cap in the morning. There was a beautiful link to that ruthless era. He went on to call Labuschagne Marcus. It was just everything is returning to the way we wanted it to be. 1994. And then obviously India mopped it up and won very comfortably by 40 runs.
I didn't actually catch any of those games.
I didn't either.
Yeah, but just like we've just come off the back of a summer, we've just decimated every other, associate nation, Pakistan, New Zealand, Sri Lanka, tier two nations, and then just like win our first ODI, 10 wickets. Just that's so pure and good. And 1994. Any point talking about the match last night where Australia? Well, one of the more interesting things for me was like, Mitchell Starc came out to bat at number 5 last night.
Well, again, that's like worn 96 World Cup areas. You know, that's like real regression into like pinch hitter stuff. You'd think that like ODI teams these days could arrange themselves for middle order batsmen to come out and hit large. Yeah. No, we'll go with the guy whose foremost skill is to bowl.
Isn't that just
in India?
But when he hits it, it's a long hit.
It's a leveraged hit.
You guys both know Starc, it's a clean ball.
It's clean.
Yeah, it's nothing dirty about those hits.
Oh, God, no.
But, like, Alex Carey was next in to bat. And, like, what's the conversation? It's like, oh, no, we think that this bowler is going to hit more runs than you in this moment.
If we're talking about clean hitting, Alex Carey is one of the cleanest.
Mate, he hit some clean balls.
Purest hitters of the cricket
cleanest balls I've seen in a while.
Not last night. I don't know about you guys. I mean, we're all like tuned in for like 10 minutes of the cricket now because there's too much of it on. Yeah. And like there's 37 screens going.
Netflix,
I watched the period when Carey was on about 25 in with Smith, just after Starc got out, I suppose. And it was just Bumrah bowling to them. Neither of them could hit him. Neither could face it. It's just too hard.
Carey's first 25 are good. But Bumrah he's got the best York in the game. It's better than Starc's. It's fucking incredible. He also chucks it, let's be honest.
Yeah. So Carey got out, then Turner got in again. Could not buy a run against this bloke, Bumrah, who is just phenomenal.
Tried to as well. Yeah. Tried the match fix. Tried to buy runs.
Okay. Your words again.
And Smith hit a big 100.
Yeah.
In ODI context, a daddy 100.
Mm-hmm. I have a theory on that, like, because he and Finch had a disastrous run out, which is always pretty funny to see like grown men regress into children in the immediate aftermath of a run out. Like Finch barked something at Smith, and then Smith yelled back at him, like, I called no. And so then Smith, obviously, to avoid Finch, hit a fear-based 100, I believe.
I don't want to go back to that dressing room. I simply
must complete this innings in order to avoid the wrath of the captain.
The fielders would have been telling them that as well. Mate, you've got a lot of pressure on this bloke now. You've got to go on with it.
Yeah. Do you reckon the Indian guys would have been, absolute barbecue here?
Oh, you've barbecued him,
Barbecued him.
That word was trending on Twitter just after that run out.
It's so disappointing, though, because like, if Australia had won this series, it would have been a great fuck you to India and the BCCI, because we were contractually obligated to go over and play this series.
During our summer.
So we had to offshore our summer. Our summer, right in the middle of the Australian summer, take these fixtures offshore at the behest of the BCCI. And if we'd won that, would have been a great victory for Cricket Australia, the entity over BCCI, the entity. I was really hoping we would, but instead the BCCI got everything it wanted. They got a competitive series and cash.
I was actually thinking during the game, I was like watching this game, I was just so happy that India didn't even make the final. Because if you remember during the World Cup final, because remember how like they started about 4 weeks after everyone else, the whole tournament was set up so they make it in the same way that like in football terms, America basically have the easiest draw to get into the World Cup because that's where the money is. So like India need to win the World Cup, they basically like arrange the whole competition so they get in.
Feels like that's what cricket is now, though. It's a little backroom arrangements of situations and scenarios for the big dogs.
And it's even going to become even more that now that England, Australia, India, there's like this chat of just three countries just playing each other endlessly. Nothing means anything.
Yeah. But, you know, Sampa got Collie out a few times, so there's that.
Got him out seven times now.
Sampa hates cricket, hates grade cricket, you know, enjoys getting Collie out a lot.
Hates cricket, gets the best batsman
exactly.
out of cricket.
I mean, just when a cricketer's going to start admitting that they like it at the top level, you know.
Like, turn around again, everything's cyclical.
I appreciate it with Sampa. He said I hate grade cricket, so he's being specific, but, you know, it's like, I'm Shoreditch, I'm whiskey, I'm vegan, I'm animal rights.
To be fair, I reckon I would fucking love international cricket. If I played it, I'd fucking love it.
Revelation on the Grade Cricketer podcast.
But grade cricket, not so much.
No.
So I feel with
that. There's a very big difference between grade cricket and international cricket.
Heaps.
A fairly big difference.
Well, speaking of things that never happened. Well, no, I suppose before then. So that's the end of Australia's, the men's team anyway, playing.
We will not remember these results in 48 to 72 hours.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say weeks then for a second. Oh, yeah, definitely. So next time Australia played the men's team is at the end of February. We have three ODIs, three T20s against South Africa over there. Then we come home immediately and have three one-dayers in Australia, two of which are in Sydney, one's in Hobart. But March is in the next time Australian men play cricket in Australia.
South Africa one will be interesting because it's, you know, Warner and Smith going back to Cape Town.
Oh, yeah, good point.
The crimes and, you know, I presume it will briefly bring Sandpaper back into focus. There'll probably be some retrospectives about Sandpaper. Personally, don't think there's any more to be said about it. I think everything's been said about Sandpaper.
Yeah.
Three guys knew about it. It was the only time they did it. It never benefited from anywhere else. Well, for sure, the bowlers were never aware of the formal strategy for manipulating the ball. Case closed. Let's move on.
Bancroft was young, didn't know any better. Just didn't know any better. He's 26 years old.
Enough's been said about it.
I've had enough of it, and I don't even want to know.
Exactly.
Speaking of the Big Bash.
It'll also be good when Australia plays New Zealand at the SCG in March as the NRL round one's kicking off. Nice and normal.
Oh, my God.
It's nice and normal.
What's the fucking
The Roosters
point?
Won today and
what
Smith
is the season
70.
Anymore?
Yeah, what's the point? Looking forward to it. Should be good.
Should be good.
Big Bash. Only thing to talk about really is the Renegades Heat game last night, which was one of the biggest... Well, it was the biggest capitulation in Big Bash history. There was like so many records recently, but the comps were going for 9 years, so...
Right.
So it's not really... It's a bit like...
Is it really historic?
Yeah, it's kind of like sort of test records in like 1901 kind of thing.
If anyone should own that record, it's the Brisbane Heat, though.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed. Well, why do you say that?
Well, the Brisbane Heat are just like perennially a side that just, you know, like adopts that phrase and lives that phrase of like, gee, it's a long ball.
Yeah, whacks them.
Which is, gee, gives them a whack. I always get out there, give them a whack.
Bash Brothers.
Just, you know, the Bash Brothers.
I agree.
Yeah, it's just, it's
the
marketing.
Whole team
it's guys
is that.
Picking up contracts.
The whole
you know.
Team is that.
Yeah. Great egos. Yeah. Fantastic. And then... They just lose.
Yeah. So last night, we were going through before off air, but last night, what are the Renegades got 160?
166.
And the Heat in reply were none for
73 or
four overs, which is a record, you were saying.
I think so. Power play record. And then they
And then, from then, they did six and over.
Yeah.
With 10 wickets in hand.
10 wickets in hand. And AB de Villiers.
Yeah. and they lost by 40 runs.
Yeah. They got annihilated.
That can happen, though.
That can happen. And that's the thing about Big Bash cricket. It can happen.
Yeah, anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
So
really
it was a wonderful
does.
Interview between Ponting and Lynn afterwards as well.
Yeah.
Very telling, I thought.
Is AB de Villiers, is he good anymore? Said in Bill Simmons' voice nasally. Is he good anymore or is he just like a... Is he a myth?
Well, it's a bit, to me, because he hit his first ball against Rashid Khan against the Strikers for four through cover, and you're just thinking, oh, fucking hell, this guy is so much better than everyone else. He's so good. In the same way that, remember when Hilton Cartwright played his first test match?
Never
so
forget it. Never forget it.
Comparing de Villiers to Hilton Cartwright's first ball,
Yeah, but he hit it for four, and we go, fuck, here we go, this guy's the real deal. He's at number six.
Yeah.
He's going to bowl a bit, he's going to bat a bit. And we thought, this is the future.
He's a robot has been created by bowling machine regime in Australian cricket.
Yep.
From the 90s and today. And I was excited about the future of Australian cricket with Hilton Cartwright.
Turns out it was just a rig-based selection.
Just a classic rig-based.
Seen it before. So, yeah, but what's happened is de Villiers has failed twice, therefore he'll fail forever.
Yeah, whatever you did last is what you'll do forever.
Yeah.
That's right.
And so de Villiers, he's at the bottom of
and
the
power.
And
do a bad thing twice in a row, then you're bad.
Absolute myth.
Faf du Plessis was asked whether he would be interested in having AB de Villiers in his World Cup squad, and he said, yes, I'd be keen. Yes.
Is that
which
like
is the least surprising headline I've ever seen in my
life.
When
someone asks, like, you know, do you want to go to this thing on the weekend? You say, yeah, I'm keen. Mm. But you're not really, like, by Thursday, you're already trying to get out of those plans? Yeah, or was the context like, yes, I'm extremely keen?
It's more like we've exhumed Bradman. He's 27 years old in the prime of his life, and his, you know, equivalent sports science is there, and they asked Finch, would you like Bradman to play? Yeah, I'd be keen.
It's like literally salivating while saying, yeah, I'd be keen.
1950s Australia, Bradman's just retired. Do you want him back? Okay.
Wouldn't mind.
Yeah, we'll have him back for the T20 World Cup in 1950.
It actually doesn't play aerially that much, though, Bradman.
Bradman, he would have struggled. He would have rotated the strike nicely.
Yeah, shit in the power play.
Yeah. You'd probably bat him six.
Mm. You'd put Stark in before him.
If you needed to create some momentum. Yeah.
So the main storyline around the whole tournament is the Melbourne Stars. Are we done with the Brisbane Heat? I just can't be bothered with the Brisbane Heat. I just can't be
the
bothered
only thing
it.
That's made the Brisbane Heat funnier to watch, because they've been fairly funny for the last like 3-4 years with the Bash Brothers and stuff, is now the addition of the all-time just give them a whack coach in Lehman. Yeah. It actually completes it for a brand campaign for them. Yeah. So they're actually doing really well. At least they've got identity. You know, give them a whack. Go long, you know.
I like Darren Lehman's new look as well.
I do too.
With the cap on and the beard.
It looks good, actually.
Yeah. What's that actor's name? The guy was in Kenny.
Shane Jacobson.
Jacobson.
Yeah.
It's got to be that going on.
Yeah.
There's salt and pep.
He looks like Shane Jacobson from Kenny.
Get him on the show. Shane, I mean. So Harris Ralph. Let's talk about Harris Ralph.
Okay.
He's been brought into the T20. He's been brought into the Pakistan T20 squad, which is amazing because it was only a year ago he was playing first grade for Western Suburbs in Australia. Mm-hmm. He was playing
for a lowly sort of club, with respect. Yeah. But I guess that's not really
respectful. Well, a couple of years before, he's been to Wests twice. First time he wasn't even
dollar playing, a run.
Yeah, wasn't even playing first grade. Came back. Then he got picked up in the PSL.
That'll make sense, actually.
Yeah.
West's picking him in twos and he's playing for Pakistan.
Yeah, exactly. Good work.
That's just Australia.
That's Australia, isn't it? Disrespect anything.
Yeah.
Well, what grade would Boomer play here? Anyway, carry on.
Well, he looks shit.
Yeah. Would you run up?
Yeah.
He'd be in the second net.
He would start in the second net.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they'd probably send him to fix his action.
Yeah.
You get a ball like that. You've got to wear long sleeves, mate.
Break down his action, change him, turn him into Brett Lee 2.0.
This shit.
Yeah, exactly.
A bit rare.
Harris Rouse. So he was playing great cricket in Tasmania earlier this season. Got brought in to replace Pat Brown for the Melbourne Stars, who was a replacement for Dale Steyn. And now he's just fucking absolutely killing it. And now he's into the World Cup squad. It's amazing. It's actually amazing.
And Tasmania is so geographically far away from Pakistan as well. Which
good point.
Blows my mind.
Yeah.
Well, this is a win for Nick Cummins, the head of the Stars, BBL, because he saw him in Hobart cricket, knew of him. Hobart didn't want a piece of him. Cummins said, I'm your champion. Come over with the Stars, with the big boys.
Champion. And now he's, so he owes everything to him.
Yeah. I won't say you champed him, necessarily, just a figure of speech, but he owes everything to Nick Cummins. Ralph is great run-up. Love how his hands are over the ball, just disguising it. Can't see the seam. Did you guys watch the seam when, as batsmen? You know how they say, oh, he's covering the seam.
Towards the end of my career, I just watched the bowler's eyes, which was really bad for my cricket because I was just focused too much on the facial expressions of the bowler.
I never looked at the ball when the guy was running in. I do with Ralph because I'm just interested in what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
there were, in like the 90s, there was like people started covering up the ball when they were running in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As though there was a lot of play around with that.
But as a batsman, I never thought like, oh, I've detected that one side is shiny than the other. Therefore, that's the way the balls swing. Like if you get any trigger, it's just like, well, he looks like he's about to bowl an innie. I didn't go like, it's actually that one is darker than the
other.
So therefore, it's going to go this way.
I remember like thinking that when like, because the test match commentators in like the early 2000s, late 90s was like, oh, you try and pick up the shine of the ball. How the fuck can you see the shine of the ball from like 80 metres away?
You have fucking 80-20 vision. I'd already made my decision up what shot I was going to play before the ball was bowled.
Exactly.
Anyway. Two balls before
the
ball's
bowled. Which way it's
going. I'm going to play a cover drive and three balls from now.
If it's back of it, like this is hitting me in the face. It's going to hit me in the face.
I'm going to run down the wicket and hit in the face.
Just absolute lottery. But it's good though. I mean, to be fair to Ralph, he had played 3 seasons of the Pakistan Super League beforehand. But West picked him in twos, therefore he is a second grader.
Yeah.
So it's good to see a second grader doing well.
The story is of Australians recognising talent.
That's right.
Really. But Nick Cummins did do that, to be fair to him.
I mean, I suppose the story is the Big Bash. Stoinis might break the record for most runs in a season. Does anyone really care about that?
No.
They're trying to make me care. I'm seeing a lot of graphics around it on social.
Yeah.
Why? Is it the same number of games? Can you actually? Is this actually a good thing, or aren't there more games?
Well, he could
games?
Make the final, for instance, and then those games would count towards the season. So Darcy Short has the record at the moment, and I think
don't know how I feel about that.
But Darcy Short got the record last year, and they didn't make the final. Mm. So
yeah. Well, there's all sorts of weird batting stats with BBL with that shit. You know, Reading goes.
They shouldn't have 50. Any records.
But it's almost it doesn't mean anything because it's such a new competition.
9 years old. Let's just stop with the record stuff.
Mm. Well, you know, Hilton Cartwright's among the top 20 run scorers ever in the BBL. So,
yeah,
once again.
He's got a test cap.
He does, yeah. How many you got there, champ?
Yeah.
Yep.
How many bag greens AB's Villiers got?
Yeah, good point.
Tell you that much.
The South African cap is
well, I'm looking
baggy,
forward to
technically, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Tom Morris boundary riding at the Stars final, actually. Should be good. It's funny how he's not on anymore.
That's
but
weird.
He wasn't banned.
Yeah, it's weird.
All good.
That's really strange.
I just love the access you get.
Yeah.
Love the access you get through the broadcasts. The tech.
You know, with the Stars, like they got Glenn Maxwell's just killing it as well. He's hardly getting a hit because they're winning every game so easily at the moment. The Stars, which is all, as you were saying before, Pez, all just sets up nicely for the Stars to fuck it up again like they did last year.
That's the story. I think that's the BBL story coming up. Just win. They're just going to win unstoppably. A couple of test players come back. Oh shit! Now you know Smith and whoever's playing for the Sixers.
I was just thinking about it, sort of all kinds of things about Australia. Just don't recognise the talent. Like Glenn Maxwell was in terrible form for Australia, but he's got an unbelievable record in India.
Yeah,
as well rated there. And then Mitchell Starc bats five in the ODIs. And he's like whacking him here.
This is like the new Maxwell did it for reverse sweep off his second ball test match. Starc fucking got a hit at five.
Yeah,
I just think it's strange. Like that, there's no one in the team who can fill a role.
That was strange that they didn't have like a middle. I mean, Turner's meant to be able to do that, but he just couldn't. He just couldn't deal with Bumrah. Genuinely, watching that last night, it was just too hard. And Smith was trying to close in on his 100. But this is the thing. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of revisionism on Maxwell, and they should have taken him into India given his subsequent form. But like, no one's going to say it. No, like honestly, no one will say it. Maxwell won't say it. But like, it's quite clear that it's great for him that he didn't go to India and he just got out of that for a bit and he had a break and he's good.
Is he going to the IPL?
Yeah, believe so.
He should be. Yeah, he would have been one of the top picked. Yeah.
Everything's actually worked out okay.
Yeah.
It's fine. Maxwell may well be back as long as he's happy and relaxed and good for him.
Good for him. All right, let's get
doesn't sell newspapers though.
That's not that a newspaper seller. Newspaper. Yeah. Yeah. More revelations on TGC.
Or digital subscriptions for newspapers.
But Starc at five, what the fuck was that about? I'll never be able to let this go. Mm. South Africa versus England, the third test there in Port Elizabeth. The series is tied at 1-1. England on the verge of winning and taking that series to 2-1 to the English team. As we go to air, it's the end of day four. Day five tomorrow, there's a bit of rain around, but the England just need 4 wickets. South Africa's still 188 runs behind. Joe Root fucking took 4 for.
It's awesome.
South Africa are in a really strange place. There's a whole thing about a lot of their best players doing like the coal pack thing. We're going to county cricket. The bowling is okay, but the batting is weak. So my takeaway from this is that South Africa are not good and England shit as well.
Yeah, but
happy
like...
Everyone happy with that?
Yeah, that's good. Move along.
You've summed up everything.
Yeah. But every team freezes in relation to how they did against Australia. So for me, like South Africa are a massive Achilles heel for Australia and they're still really good. Like if Ollie Pope's hit 130 over there, young guy, a lot of people are pretty happy in England about that, saying, oh, you know, he looks like a proper prospect.
People are saying, oh, he's more stylish than Ian Bell.
Yeah.
He's going to be the top run scorer of all time for England.
Which is obviously, unlike England to build a player up very helpfully beforehand. But by the same token, if a young Australian did that, we'd be fucking all over them too. So,
mate, he hasn't come, to Australia yet, has he?
Hmm. English cricket is great. English cricket's really good. Like, if we were winning 2-1 in South Africa, we'd be cock-a-hoop as well. So they're doing well. Joe Root's taken 4 for, can't hit 100.
But who are all these English players? Like, where were they during the Ashes? There's a lot of guys playing in this series weren't around the
it's
Ashes.
It's a super young team. So there's Dom Best took 5 for in the first innings. He's 22 years old. Bowled really well. Ollie Pope. I just can't get over Ben Stokes. I think he's just probably their best ever player.
Fucking hell.
He's just having one of those. Who's better? Who's better than Ben Stokes? Both of them?
There's revisionist history around both of them as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, I've just seen the highlights of the 149. Did he play any more tests? I know nothing about him. Never heard of him. But, like, Stokes is just having one of those purple patches in cricket. It's gone on for ages.
Yeah.
Like, eventually he will come down to earth. He'll have a shit series and someone will figure out something about him. And don't know. He must just feel invincible. Well, mate,
I reckon that punch really fucked him because he was in searing form heading into that Aussie series. And if he'd have kept that form, he was Cricketer of the Year, I think, in like around the world, probably best in the world then. Mm-hmm. The punch fucked him. Mm-hmm. He misses the Aussie. Could choose better words than that, couldn't I?
No.
But no, couldn't. So he has a little break. Then he builds himself back up, and now he's probably the most valuable best player in the world.
Score runs forever on an exponential graph.
Every single time England win, he has contributed in some enormous way. Yeah. And like in some circumstances where it's like tight, he's bowling, he's getting big wickets, he takes catches. Yeah,
first slip.
He fucking scores big runs. I mean, even when he first came to the side room, he scored 100 at the Wacker when Australia beat England 22-0. Yeah. And like England were just so far off it, but he came into that series and he was good then. That's when he first came to the side. And like he's just, I just can't think of another English player who is overall better than him. Ever.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's just hard to know where to even
Ian Bell was a good-looking player, though, to be fair.
he's a good little player.
Yeah, he's a good little player.
England's side has so many jack-of-all-trades players apart from Stokes, though. You know, like Root takes four for, but struggles to hit a ton. They've got, you know, 87 keepers who bat, or Butler doesn't keep but bats eight or something like that. Like, Test cricket just needs like boringly prolific players. It's my advice to England if you're listening out there winning a series 2-1 against South Africa.
Well, I speak for everyone I say that. Let's hope it rains in day 5.
Glad Rabada's suspended for yelling as well.
Yeah, do you want to go through that?
Not really. Just good stuff. It's good. Just what you just get. He just bowls Root and then she yells very loudly and like in a cathartic way, in a way we'd all appreciate. But, you know, as Jonathan Agnew said, well, he totted up. Like a speeding fine, he's totted up his demerit points, and unfortunately, saying with, you know, the greatest earnestness and sincerity, unfortunately has to miss. Yeah, I'm very sad about it.
But is this the same as the speeding fine analogy? Really? Like, I mean, if you commit too many speeding fines and you're a danger to yourself and society on the road, and you should be removed from that situation. Yeah. Is Rabada a danger to cricket?
He is. I mean, I side with Agnew. Yeah.
He's yelling.
It's absolutely. Lucky it actually wasn't during the Boxing Day test because double demerits.
I guess it was pretty loud, whatever he yelled.
He just yelled.
It was loud.
Yeah.
Have you got, like, when you're in the dressing rooms and someone's just, like, just bowled someone and, like, the bowler just gets so, it's just such a release. They see red and, like, it's just this fucking mist.
They actually have 5 seconds to black out.
It's kind of scary.
Where life is lawless for
them. It gets a little bit
when
scary.
When a bowler takes a wicket and he's yelling and then you're trying to hug him or something?
No.
Where are you in this?
In my car. Driving past the ground, yelling out, "How's that?" No, you're in the dressing room, and maybe you're next in, or maybe you're two in. Or maybe you've already been out.
It from inside
and you see the reaction. And you just, it's a little bit like, ooh.
Unnerving, yeah.
Yeah, unnerving, yeah.
But when you hear, like, it sounds so hostile in the dressing room where you're coming from, then you go out and it's almost quite serene on the field, and that, the differentiation between what you've heard there and what the setting is outside is equally jarring.
No, exactly. That's very chilling, those moments. Great cricket like that. Suburban cricket can be quite chilling like that.
Do you ever, like, you play a game and it's, like, really intense on the field, right? It's, like, there's fucking just edge. Like, there's something in the air. And then you're, like, someone will be walking outside the ground, maybe just, someone's walking their dog. And, like, society lives outside the ground. Yeah. But in the ground, you're just, like, oh, it's actually a bit like there's 12 men, including an umpire, apparently, who are angry at me.
You never know what other people are going through. You know what I mean?
It's 12. It's anything going. It's like war, and it's being officiated by like 2 80-year-old umpires who would have no authority outside of this boundary.
And then there'll be like a single mother like chasing her son outside the ground. And you're just like, oh, that's nice.
Why is she single?
Because I wanted to be single.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. 50% of marriages end in divorce.
And they're just the ones that are divorced too. Mm-hmm. What about the remainder? How many of them are happy? So, what about when you're about to go into batting club cricket and everything actually looks serene out there and you get out there and find that it's completely different? Like, you're watching this thing 80 metres away and everything
really
just looks quiet and you're like, oh, this is just cricket being played, and you get out there and you're like, oh, gee, there's a lot of arseholes here.
Yeah.
Well, what I try to do is I try and focus on which side the ball's being shined.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's our analysis of the Rabada suspension. Yeah. Just totted them up.
Yeah.
Just totted them up.
The Under-19 World Cup's happening at the same time. Australia play the first game against the West Indies. In their group is England and also Nigeria. It has you excited for Australia versus Nigeria under 19 World Cup?
Can't wait, mate. It's going to be an absolute.
Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Yeah, oh, just the young blokes. The young blokes, I think, from both sides, and they are on both sides. I'm really looking forward to all of them, all 22 of them.
Yep,
and maybe some of the others that can get a run.
Would you like to see the under 19 World Cups to be umpired by also under 19s?
Would I like to see it?
Yeah,
you like to see it, don't you? I would like to see it.
You wouldn't hate to see it.
I wouldn't hate.
No.
I wouldn't hate.
Well, Australia lost their first game against the West Indies. Jake Fraser-McGuirk, who we might have spoken about in the past, 19-year-old from debuted against for Victoria, got a 50 in his first game. Mm. Good little player.
Yeah.
Good little player.
Fraser-McGuirk.
Yeah.
Which private school did he go to?
Anyone with a double-barreled name must have gone to an elite private school. That's the rule. He got 84 in the first game, but Australia fell. The West Indies chased down their score 3 wickets down, I believe it was.
Right.
So Australia will therefore lose every match, including the ones against Nigeria.
We expect to win under-19s tournaments, don't we?
We've only ever won two.
All great captains and players for Australia have dominated under-19 tournaments throughout history, and that should continue, I'd hope.
Mm. Yes.
It's a rite of passage for all good Australian cricketers.
It's like being from New South Wales. I expect I don't follow the carnivals, but when it finishes, I expect to see that New South Wales has won.
Yeah.
New South Wales Metro, New South Wales, whatever iteration you want to call it, they need to win for the health and safety of Australian cricket.
If Australia gets bundled out before the finals, before the semis of the Under-19 World Cup, there's serious problems
Inquest.
For the future of Australian cricket. Inquests, royal commissions, all of those should be done.
Well, speaking of which, Naseem Shah's line out for Pakistan. We might remember him from the Test matches. He debuted, 16-year-old Naseem Shah, bowling 140s. He's playing the Under-19s World Cup.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well,
he should do well there.
Yeah. And the classic Australian response is not 16, though. No.
Well, he's also not the youngest in that team. They've also got a 14-year-old in their team.
Yeah, I love that.
That's
shit.
Fucked, man.
I love that.
Pakistan's just going for shock value. Yeah. How long till they select a baby, like an 8-month-old baby? Fucking bowls 140s.
I think about that quite often. This is literally
how
like,
young can you
say,
go?
Well, I don't know. Like, yeah, how young could you be to score a run at international level, like holding a bat without being injured?
3.
Do you reckon if
no
you...
No way.
You're going to be three. No, three, no.
Who's bowling?
Well, if they just bowled at you and let's just say it hits the
international
bat.
International bowler?
Yeah, what
you're
what,
and you're
what
a
skill?
Cricketer?
What skill?
Batting?
No, but what? Like who's... What bowler?
135.
Okay, so it's pace. It's not
yeah,
speed.
Yeah, pace. No, not speed.
Not little ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how old...
What fucking Mitchell Santner?
Yeah. What do you reckon? Like... Obviously, you get luck, you know, if the 3-year-old's holding a bat and just hits it, but the 3-year-old can't run, it'll be run out.
Well, that's what I was saying. He could run out.
He
could just bowl it at the bat and hits the handle of the bat and it goes for 4. Mm. So you're talking about a legitimate run. Someone's actually got behind the ball, pushed one or taken a single.
9 or 10.
Yeah, like a 10-year-old around the world might be able to just nurdle one like inside edge on the pad.
If it was Australia, they'd set you up. There'd be 2-leg gullies.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, just mental disintegration.
Do you reckon there's any 10-year-old in the country, like if Pat Cummins came in and bowled Yorkers, who could somehow do something?
Not in Australia, but you ever see those footage of like on Instagram where like there's some guy in India who's just
he's like four
and he's got the best cover drive you've ever seen.
Yeah. No, you see, it's really depressing. Yeah. Like you just go through like on the search function of Insta or whatever and like someone's just hitting amazing cover drives like better than you've ever hit in your life in the nets and they're 11.
Yep.
Yeah.
So those people.
Good point.
What's the wicket doing?
Yeah. Well, I think we've expired this hypothetical.
Speaking of wickets, just before we head to the break, the ratings pairs are in for the state of the wickets around the country.
Oh, yeah.
All of them got a very good rating, except for Perth, which got a good rating.
And Sydney.
Sydney only got good.
So Sydney got good.
Right.
Perth got good.
Right.
But Brisbane and Melbourne and Adelaide got very good.
Right.
Which is interesting because there's two venues vying for one spot to host India next year.
Right.
And, it would appear that Brisbane's pitch was, very good. Perth's was merely good. That might be taken into account when, you know, whomever, probably BCCI, decides where they'd like to play.
My first question is, what the fuck does it even mean? What's the difference between good and very good?
I don't know how Melbourne's
I think they use
very
the same
good.
Rating system as Zomato.
Yeah.
When you're rating a restaurant online. It seems pretty subjective.
It got gamed.
Yeah. Because I think I like these stories because you get to find out which ex-players are being given cushy jobs as player referees or referees.
Yeah. Did you look this up?
I think it was Sir Richie Richardson.
You think?
That's amazing.
I know it was. Yeah. I think Jawagal Srinath was one recently.
He's a match umpire. Match official. Yeah, match official. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But fucking Richie Richardson didn't rate any pitches. He just wore a floppy hat everywhere. Of course he's going to give it a shit rating.
After Australia won in 1995, first time Australia had ever won there, or had won there in like 30 years or whatever, and like the team was like War, Shane Warne, McGrath, like the very beginning of the greatest Australian team ever, Richie Richardson said at the end of that series in the press match conference, this is the worst Australia team that's ever come here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So he's rating pitches.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, where would you prefer to play India next year, the Gabba or Perth? Don't lose at the Gabba, but Perth is, you know, like quintessentially Australian and wild and bouncy and anti, India style.
I feel like Perth needs, Optus Stadium needs something. It needs history. It needs a, because the Wacker's
got all
the history.
But what do you need? Fuck the history of a stadium, which is a non, not a human being. Well, what do you feel like you need?
What do you need?
The Gabba's the answer. Gabba's the answer. You got me.
But I need people at the Gabba.
I'm so happy.
East Coast. We need it on the East Coast. It's where most of the people are. Perth feels like a different country.
But I like
going
Perth.
To the Gabba with, you know, and that there
we
are
can't turn up at
that.
The Perth airport. Like, I mean, I don't know what it's like at the Perth airport. You got recently there.
Yeah.
But we need to, as soon as they land, we need to exert dominance over them in all facets. And I feel like we can only do that effectively on the east coast of Australia.
Interesting.
Queensland.
I like Perth, though. So I want to go there.
You think Perth is possibly too welcoming for India? Mm. Brisbane will
too
be
clean.
Less welcoming.
Too
more
clean
humid
and, big.
And sticky.
Yeah.
How the fuck has Melbourne got very good?
Yeah, it's good stuff. Just back to Dave's thing about just a little, you know, set
actually,
of arrangements.
I saw the story and because the SCG got good.
Good.
And I saw that the SCG Trust chief wrote in her monthly CEO letter, "We were particularly happy with how the pitch played from day two onwards and were delighted with off-spinner Nathan Lyon's 2 5 wicket hauls. A traditional SCG wicket indeed." I was just reading that as a member going, fuck, we got a good wicket.
Yeah.
Tradition. Yeah. Spins a bit.
Oh my God.
Did a bit.
Still makes me feel safe.
Well, we're going to play 3 test matches in Sydney next year and 2 in Melbourne, so that should be good. What else on the show? Hashtag ICDC. Bo Webster and Clive Rose also coming up. Stick around.
So for me, one day cricket is special. I was just sitting today when Marcus debuting, which is fantastic, number 229. Now, so enthusiastic, they're chasing balls around, making teams up, energetic, love of the game. And I looked at these kids and I thought, they look like Marcus. And I think, that is, you know, Manus. Yeah, good point. I get the name right, yeah.
Okay, lady and gentlemen, in a world first for TJC this week, we're interviewing not just one cult figure in global cricket, but 2 simultaneously. These 2 fellas do their business for the Hobart Hurricanes and the Renegades, respectively. But when they're not on the endless BBL circuit, they're club mates at Kingborough. The Kingborough Cricket Club at the Tassie Premier Cricket. One is a dreadlocked destroyer of top orders. The other's nickname is Slug, which we'll get to later. Clive Rose and Bo Webster, welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Okay, Clive, I'll start with you, and then we'll go to Bo. So we'll do this a bit differently. Clive, can you describe what Bo's relationship to grade cricket is? How does he carry himself around grade cricket? Now he's dominated other Renegades batsmen in this team. Like, how do you expect he'll carry himself around Hobart after the season?
Fuck, I've always been a cult figure of the Hobart circuit. When he's out, he's always out when he's in Hobart. And around the Kingborough boys, he's Kingborough born and bred. He grew up playing at Kingborough, so he loves playing for the Knights. And it just depends on how he's going, I guess, with things outside of cricket, whether he wants to turn up, wants to play for the Knights or not.
Okay, so Bo, just look back to you. Like, Clive gets plenty of airtime on TV, especially when Tim Payne's commentating. Like, can you give us an insight into his great cricket persona?
Yeah, Clive's been excellent for the Kingborough Knights since he joined. He's a massive cult figure down there. I think he was our most popular player after his probably first 1 or 2 games, and he's been a stalwart down there on and off the field. He's always the first one to celebrate a win, Clive. Down in Cargo there, Jack Greeny loves flying his trade down there, but he's been very good for us.
Clive, I'll ask you this question. So according to ESPN Crick Info, Bo was born in Snug in Tasmania. Is that anything to do with his nickname Slug?
Absolutely nothing to do with his nickname Slug. I don't know what time you aired the show, but I think the clean version of why I got his nickname Slug is because he's big and tall, but that's the clean version. I'll let him, I guess, explain why.
Please.
Reasons.
Yeah.
Bo, just answer this how you will. You've got a few nicknames. I've done a little bit of digging here. Do you prefer being called Slug or Bangers?
Slug, definitely. Definitely Slug.
Okay, I'll leave that there. There's a strange social, like, we Higos and I did a gig with you guys down in Hobart a few weeks ago, and we took us out in the Hobart circuit. Great circuit. And after a few hours at the, is it Cargo? Is it Cargo down in Hobart?
Cargo, yep.
I just observed a really strange social hierarchy there. So basically everyone's crowded around a booth, which we later learned is like the premier cricket booth. But you're only allowed to sit in the booth if you are a good first grader, or you play first class cricket, or you have a woman with you.
Or you're James Faulkner.
Yeah, or you're James Faulkner. Do you support that rule that says you only sit in a booth if you're quite good at cricket?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I'll sure come out with the big boys, and I think the younger guys can sort of hover around, standing around, but until they get the seat in there, they can pour out the X-Force or go and get a few more from the bar.
I think it's a good way for the young kids to earn their stripes, I think. I do it when I was younger. I wasn't allowed to talk when I played first grade, so this is a good way for them to earn their stripes.
How do they enforce you not talking at grade? Like, do they put like some tape over your mouth, or someone kind of walks around with you? How do they enforce that obviously quite intimidatory rule?
Oh, it was whenever you said something or anything came out of your mouth, it was like no one even responded to it, or they just.
My God. Bo, you've had a very good season for Renegades so far, though the team's had a very poor season. Like, how great is it to look around the room at the end of a loss? At test players like Harris and Finch earlier, and Sean Marsh, and obviously Dan Christian's played a lot of T20 cricket around the world as well, and just think, boys, you've got to go with me.
it's been an interesting season. I've had a few messages from a few of the mates back in England club cricket, and a few around Tassie being like, Jesus, you just need someone to go with you, don't you? Those sore shoulders you're having in the batting there. But it's Sean Marsh had a hell of a tournament. He's second on the run, I think, at the moment, so it's nice that he's getting a few runs. But yeah, it is nice to make some runs when you're doing so well. But the old cliche, it's not much fun unless you're winning.
Slug, I just want to say your name, Slug. You obviously playing in the game last night against the Heat, and I was just looking at like the celebrations after was it Cameron Boyce took the last wicket, or whoever took the last wicket, and just like the
Cameron Boyce, yep.
just the absolute laughter and like the hyena guffawing, and just the opposition just capitulated 10 for 36. That must have been just most satisfying like victory in that you would have had in ages, only because they only had one other one, but still.
Yeah, well, like you said, we've only had one this year in the 2 months. But yeah, I got to a point there where with every wicket, you just sort of
just funny,
more and more, being like, it couldn't happen, could it? And then I think when Big Cutsy got given out LBW there, it was we think it was pretty much game over. And then the chat started happening, and the chat about the Melbourne Stars last year and everything like that started to happen.
Good.
It was a good couple hours after that. Definitely,
everyone was on cloud nine for our second win out of 11 games. Clive, you've been around the BBL for a while. I think you came in during Shane Warne's twilight years. What was it like, late era Warne? He's probably dating Liz Hurley at the time. What kind of dressing room presence was Warne back then?
Exactly what you expect, I think. Just a big dog. We'd have training, and he'd be lying next to the net, down the net on the side while everyone else was training, just like yelling out, barking orders, basically. He wouldn't bowl, didn't see him bowl a ball at training his last couple of years. And Liz Hurley came into the rooms a few times, a few conversations, I guess, at the time. But yeah, he was exactly what you'd expect him to be, I guess, around the room.
Just back to you, Clive. I mean, you had the match in Sydney the other night. That was washed out. You just had Josh Philippe stumped, just running down the wicket. You were bowling beautifully, and then you obviously had to come off for rain. I mean, obviously it hasn't rained in Australia for ages, so it was really nice to get some relief. But also, how keen were you just to finish your four overs and get off?
Actually, I only bowled two overs, and Wade actually normally bowls me three in the power play, and this is the only time that I wanted to bowl three in the power play, and he held me back. To bowl after the power play, so I was fuming a little bit because I felt like I was on a roll. I could get another wicket.
Yeah.
I don't get many wickets in the Big Bash, so that could have been the opportunity. I came off the ground asking when it got called off. I came off the ground asking if my wicket tally still counts if it got washed out. So.
just one from the club, Bo. Just a true or false. Bo was a gifted young cricketer playing for Tassie under-19s as a 14-year-old. This was a sticking point for the Webster family as the selectors picked Bo over his older brother, who was left to be 12th man.
I did play my first under 19s with my brother, yeah, and then I think he got left out of the next one, or he got was running the drinks a few times, so there was definitely some good banter there. I sort of said bad luck behind closed doors, but around the boys I was giving him plenty of stick on it.
Clive, we often speak a lot about personal branding in the Big Bash. You've obviously gone for the cornrows previously. You've got the glasses going on this year, very sort of Daniel Vettori-esque. We've seen Joffre with the cornrows as well. I mean, how inspirational has Dennis Rodman been on your career?
It's funny because I was talking to Gurinder Sandy the other day, and I was I wanted to actually get my I had a few ear piercings a few years ago, and I wanted to actually bring them back in, but someone actually mentioned that I look a bit like Dennis Rodman. I'm getting a Dennis Rodman look, and I'm not sure if I want to portray that sort of image just yet in my career.
I think Dennis Rodman turned up in a wedding dress to a book launch in the 90s. Would you consider turning up to a Big Bash game in a wedding dress?
He got married to Carmen Electra in a wedding dress. He's wearing a wedding dress at the reception.
Yeah. Thoughts?
I'll stew on that one for a bit, I think. Speak with any other options.
Sonia, just on you again, Clive. I'm told you're a very impressive indoor cricketer. Like, you're one of the best indoor cricketers in the country. Like, should our country rightly regard you with suspicion, given that you actually decide to play and invest and engage in indoor cricket?
I don't know if I'm the best in the country, but I do love the game more than I love the game more than outdoor cricket. To be honest with you, if I could say that the rest of my life, I would. But like I take it, the boys give me sick about indoor cricket all the time, but I still try to pump it and try to pump it up as much as I can and get the boys to play. It's not happening at the moment, but I'm sure some of them will come good. But some of the young kids are going to play, I reckon. I keep pumping it up.
Slugger, just back to you. You were the batsman when Greg Davidson did the now infamous nosegate thing. Can you talk us about how you're feeling? Like, just if you said anything to him after the game, during the game, during the innings, just like talk us through it.
No, well, I was obviously running down the wicket when I saw his arm go up, and then I sort of there may be a little indication of my eyes looking into the inside edge of my bat, but I won't say that.
Fucking smashed
it.
It's
obviously a big no-no, but I did hit it, and I think a few of the boys heard that I hit it, and I told him that he made the right call, and he was a bit rattled, the big fella, for a few overs after that. I reckon he was going to get suspended and all sorts of things. He was pretty good. He just kept saying to me, "You did hit it, didn't you? You hit it, didn't you?" I was
like, "Yeah, yeah." So,
I could have gone to first. It may not have told him I smacked it, to be honest. But it was the right decision in the end. I did feel for him because he was sweating and he was under the pump there, and there was still about seven overs to go. So.
Well, so how big does someone have to be for you to call someone the big fella? Like, aren't you like 2 meters tall?
Yeah, he's a slug.
Yeah, you're the slug.
Anything around that 2 meter mark, they get the big fella.
But you're so tall, yet you choose to bowl off breaks. Do you realise this is an egregious waste of height?
Your alarm's going off.
And that your car's been broken into?
That's me at the airport.
I get plenty of stick about it. Everyone just thinks it's because I'm a bit of a PR when it comes to fast bowling, if you ask some of the Tassie boys. But just found out it was a bit more of an easier way to get in the team, I suppose, to keep yourself in the team. So I've stuck with it. They're pretty ordinary off breaks, to be honest, but it's nice to be able to bowl a few O's when you're getting bored in the field.
Your star's obviously rising, Slug, a little bit on the back of a bunch of good performances. Though it's alleged at grade level, the coach says to the team to not clap you when you hit 50 because it's believed that you switch off once you hear applause of any kind.
Yeah.
Care to comment?
I don't care. I think that was our old coach, Adam Maher, used to say that. Marbo, he's a bit of a grumpy man, and he got to a point there where I'd get out after 50 because he reckons I was getting too big-headed with my 50 and be happy with my work. So I think it sort of carried on there a little bit. But now that Clivey's back down there in charge, and I think I've been having a mate of 50. You haven't made a 50 thing in about a year and a half. Well,
apparently, I'm told you average 4 in 4 games for Kingbred this year.
Yeah, actually, a single-figure scores haven't even looked like it in the middle of that, so they probably don't want me back here at the moment.
So between you guys, there's obviously yourself, Clive, you, Bo, you've got Gurinder Sandhu down there as well, all the same, playing at the same club. Do you guys just talk to each other? Do you guys actually know any of the other names of the guys in the team?
Yeah, just a couple of boys that have played under-19s with, but other than that, a lot of champs and mates and friends around.
Yeah.
I actually... I've been down there for about 7 years, and the first 3 or 4 years, I don't think I knew anyone that played second grade. Even when they came into first grade, I don't reckon I remember their name for about 3 years until I started actually coaching down there. It was actually pretty bad, but that was actually just how it was.
I suppose you guys wouldn't want to comment on this as well. It's just word coming in that, like, with Renegades Team Fines, you guys just sort of drink half a pint instead of paying money and stuff like that, and then there might have just been an indiscretion around driving cars the following day, just without naming any names.
I don't want to comment, but our fines meetings do get pretty. I don't know what the word is, but there was a few sick boys in the first half an hour. That's for sure. I think it's led by Dan Christian, and he's pretty relentless on some of the fines. And if you mumble in trying to find someone else, you get pinned. So it can be a dangerous game trying to find someone. Yeah. You can end up on drinking about very dangerous, a litre.
Well, thank you for joining Grade Cricketer Confidential, this new interview series. And thanks for joining this global first as well, Clive and Bo. Wishing you guys the best for the rest of the season, and thanks for enduring that.
Thank you very much. Well, cheers.
Thanks for having us.
Major news this week, fellas. Everyone will have seen it, but Prince Harry and Meghan Markle have decided to step down from their official royal duties. Harry immediately went to help with the Rugby League World Cup promotion. It's great to see him go from kind of a high-level, ivory tower institution, down to the grassroots.
Mm, sure.
Harry's also promoted budgie smuggler in the past. He's had pictures taken with Kirtley Beale, I believe, or his brother has. Who cares?
official pictures,
and
from
I believe Linney,
royal family.
Oh yeah, it's official. Royal family. They own the rights to them. Pictures, yeah. And I just, on behalf of Linney, if you are listening, Harry, I hope you don't abandon your post as a promoter of budgie smuggler. We certainly won't.
I remember when South Africa won the World Cup, the Rugby World Cup. They who was the player? I forget who the player was. Who was like, we just walked up to Prince Harry in his budgie smuggler.
He was a halfback, little fella.
Yeah, little player.
Yeah, good little player.
He was like, walked up to Harry with the World Cup and was just photographed, and he was just wearing South Africa budgies next to Prince Harry. Great stuff. Mm. Nice synergies there.
There's a great career, a great post-Prince career for Harry in just budgie smuggler influencer work. You'd probably get up to 1,000 AUD a post.
Take our budget for it, but yeah, have a crack.
He'd have heaps of... No, yeah, that's on the official... request. No, it's on official budget.
Mm.
Official budgiesmuggler.com.
Budget smuggler. Just a separate business that we'll be talking about later. Yeah, guys, so budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Mm. Done that justice? Ah, we did a thing.
What was the thing?
Hashtag buy us, TGC. Buy the thing. Budgiesmuggler.com.au. Hashtag us, TGC. This one comes in from Coach. You might remember him from last week. He had the chop story.
Coach.
Trying to get the story about what was his story again? Someone left the club. And
was this the wife swapping?
Yeah,
one?
Wife swap. No, it wasn't wife swapping.
Oh wait, we didn't talk about that one.
That was off air. Wife swapping one.
I got the school chaplain in for that. Anyway, that's a separate thing. We'll talk about that another time. Seriously.
Anyway, Coach says, "Hi gents, my heartfelt thanks for your advice relating to chops in the latest podcast. I already see that your advice may be a crucial piece of the jigsaw puzzle that is a Middlesex 2020." campaign for my team. I now require your sage advice in relation to the circuit. I am desperately in need of your counsel once again. Last season, after some ordinary early season performances, I, as coach, instigated the Friday night circuit ban. This, of course, did not apply to me. On the Saturday immediately following the circuit ban, we were rewarded with an epic victory. However, during the post-match fine session, it came to my attention that, to a man, the team had ignored instructions and circuited. I was dumbfounded by this result. Are the cricketing gods laughing at me? Sidebar question. In what human form do the cricketing gods best resemble, in your opinion? Should I admit defeat and surrender to the concept that the circuit pre-match actually makes little, if any, difference to performance? I note that as the circuit ban did not apply to me, and I may have had a few on the Friday night, it seems to make no difference to my pre-match mitt work. P.S. I think I need glasses or a bigger mitt. Yours truly, Coach.
Mm. I like his question about what human form do the cricket gods take, because I've often wondered that myself. Or are the cricket gods the same as Mother Cricket in England?
Which
always makes me think of Mother Teresa for some reason.
Yeah, they're similar, but it's slightly different.
So I think that the cricket gods look like a
cricket Catholic, gods are like Roman gods,
Catholic
like
nun
Yeah, or Greek or Roman gods, whereas Mother Cricket is more of an ethereal, overarching kind of motherly spirit that just exacts justice whenever you think you're on top of the game. That's actually from Wisden. I'm reading from Wisden.
Yeah, and not blinking again.
what was the question? Yeah.
The question is, he imposed a pre-match circuit. So you can't circuit on Friday. That's what the coach said. The team circuit on Friday anyway. So he's got no respect to the players, that's clear.
Yeah.
But the team had a massive win.
So circuiting works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found, my problem with my great career was many things, but I just loved a Friday circuit. Loved it. And then it got
You're softening the water. That's not a phrase, softening the waters.
It's the best
you're not kind of, you're making an excuse, a ready-made excuse for your inevitable failure.
I suppose so. I just found it was the best night of the week to go out. Like Friday night in the city, just people are off work. Yeah. You got 2 days to recover for most people.
It's
most,
definitely
most
the best
sane
night
people.
To go out.
But then, like, I think I might have already told this story, but like one day, it was at Coogee Oval. We were practicing before the game. I was like still inebriated. Ball went up for doing like high catches, and I was like looking up, and I got like vertigo. I was like, I almost like fell over. Didn't even get a hand on this catch, and I was like, well, this is probably a bit of a problem now. So that actually did affect my performance that day.
I remember turning up to a PGs game, and Pez, you remind me of this often, wearing a wine-soaked, should I say, vest from the previous night where I went to a 21st, got absolutely hammered. Mm-hmm. That was how much I respected Portive and Grey cricket.
Well, there's more to that. You were leaning up against the brick scoreboard at Pratton Park, and if you imagine Dave in a red wine-soaked vest, what you're forgetting out of that is there was literally nothing underneath that vest. And I don't know if it's a figment of my imagination, but you were also playing guitar.
That was around the era where I did bring guitar. I don't think I was playing during that outdoors.
You've got aviators on in my acoustics. Memory. But that game was called off against West. I remember that.
So that's probably
also, I'm pretty sure like Richard Cheekweed hit 100 the day before and it was on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pratton Park West, so Harris Ralph might have been playing that game.
Good boy. Actually, yeah. He may well have been. All right, we're good with that. Okay, James Curtis writes in, and he wrote this one directly to me, so I'll read it out. Hi, Sam.
By what platform?
Well, he'll reveal this. Hi, Sam. Thanks for providing the opportunity for social leapfrogging by allowing me to network with an influential inner Sydney sider like yourself via LinkedIn. I unfortunately did not have the courage to do so at the three shows of yours I saw in 2019, the two Brisbane ones and one in Birmingham. I also enjoyed your feature today talking about your grade career. Good to see you do actually love the game. Anyway, enough of the earnest fanboying, down to the real stuff. On third grade debut this year, I took 5 for 37 off 17. However, I was dropped the next round due to team balance, inverted commas, I bowl offies, and have only played one more game of threes. I'm currently stuck behind my good mate who is a better prospect. He bowls left-arm darts in a hat and averages 152 with the ball in threes. Should I take this as a sign to retire at season's end and focus upon my burgeoning career in the financial services industry or just switch clubs? Cheers. Mm. So I sought... So thanks for the question, James, and the main reason this is in there, probably a fairly pedestrian RTGC, if we're fair, about it, but the fact that it was a slide into a LinkedIn DM was really jarring. Like this guy, James, and thanks for the question, he's wearing a full suit. He's had like a proper LinkedIn profile picture. Yep. Probably paid for one of those ones you see on street signs. Like,
yep.
Yeah.
What connection was he? Was he a second connection?
Zero.
Oh, so he had to send an in-mail, which means he had a premium account.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, correct.
It's all part of his burgeoning financial career.
He was, yeah. And he works and the bio was just financial services, so I don't know if he's in between or anything like that.
So corporate finance or accounting.
Yeah. And I just had to clarify a few things with him because I was like, okay, James, thanks for that via LinkedIn. Secondly, third grade, this sounds like Yuck Park shit. You can't take 5 for 37 off 17.
This is all happening under the LinkedIn platform.
Oh, yeah. On the Messenger, yeah. Can't take 5 for 37 off 17 in like Premier Cricket on debut and then be dropped for somebody who averages 152 with a ball who bowls in a hat. Hmm. And he confirmed in Brisbane, this is precisely what happened. He played threes in Brisbane and was dropped straight off. So I'm like, well, this is a clear kind of example of thievery. You've thieved something from somebody that if someone's got social issue with you, is that correct? Yeah. And he wouldn't confirm or deny.
So what's his question? Should he retire?
Or change clubs.
Or change clubs or focus on his burgeoning career in the financial services industry. Okay.
He's a loan shark.
He did go on to say he enjoyed your connections between, sad corporate life and cricket as well, Dave.
Oh, okay.
I should add.
That's good.
Anything about me?
No.
Well, if he's in next threes, question. Then he's he's a heartbeat away from twos. Mm. So he should spend the next 10 to 15 years, I would have thought, just focusing on playing upper grades.
But threes in Brisbane, that's like ninth in Sydney.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm, that's true. That's You're ninth, right. That's ninth grade.
Associate grade cricket.
Yeah. Well, James did go on to clarify via a J.R. Tolkien-sized fucking response, and I'm sorry, James, but I didn't read it, and, you know, it's a bit that I'm doing. I respect it, but at the same time, it was far too long what you wrote back to me, man. But thank you. Anyway.
Okay.
That's funny. We haven't answered this question at all.
No, just not at all. We haven't answered any of those questions.
I would sabotage his friendship with the guy who's buying darts. Sabotage a friendship and then move clubs.
Okay. This one comes from Jimmy Handley. Greetings.
Sounds like a real name.
Greetings, choppers. As a POM that's been living down under for a few years, I try to abide by the ultimate mantra of rigs, salads, chops, circuits, and alpha. So with this in mind, it's only advisable that I direct my recent predicament to the authors of said parlance. Anyway, as a person in his late 30s that has played 10 years continuously in first teams in the UK, then another 8 seasons of first team in the Southern Bayside League in Melbourne, I feel I'm fairly well positioned to know all about the senior pro. So with a high general awareness of myself throughout the traps, here lies my incident. At the start of the season, a rare unit in his mid-40s joined the club at the start of the season to play in the lower grades. After a couple of outdoor sessions, this rare unit could be described as a real trier, a nice chap, but certainly not a cricketer. Halfway through a session, I was called on to pad up, which I duly did, and strolled nonchalantly through the third net team run-ups. Second team run-ups, and finally reaching my destination at the first team nets to wait for my batting slot, only to be called out by said rare unit. Do you have any respect? I'm sorry, are you talking to me? I replied, batting. You could be a bit more courteous, the rare unit quipped. No, I fucked up, sorry, hang on. I replied, yes, I'm talking to you. You walked through my net and I watched you do it while I was batting. You could be a bit more courteous, the rare unit quipped. The training session had by now stopped, with every cricketer now watching our disagreement. I do love a bit of sledging on the field, and I have to admit I was completely unprepared for our verbal joust with my response of, bloody hell, hero, that sure told me, was as well much as I could muster. In hindsight, what should I have said to this rare unit? Thoughts? Jimmy Murrumbina Chop King is how he signs off.
Fuck me.
Jimmy Murrumbina Chop King.
Fuck me. You just read that, just exchange and just think, fucking cricketers, man. They're just stupid.
If that's fucking that's verbatim,
fucking
that exchange.
So dumb.
That's fucked.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jimmy's in the right. Like, he was just walking across. The bloke's just, like, had a go at him. I would have just looked at him and just laughed.
Jimmy's in the right?
Jimmy's in the right.
What?
He didn't do anything wrong.
Bloke interrupted three different
nets. I was sympathetic
to
Jimmy until he signed off Jimmy Murrumbina Chop King. Started to think a few things, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like rare units turn up at clubs out of nowhere at times.
Mm.
And they start challenging, and they don't observe the, like, you know, unofficial social hierarchical constitution of cricket. And it can really set the club aflame, you know, intangibly so. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with these guys? Well, you ostracize, like, they eventually ostracize themselves from the club.
Or you do a police check on them, because they're usually escaping from something.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Jimmy. Do a police check on him.
But not on yourself. Not on yourself.
The old Murrumbina Chop King.
do you have to apologize for saying the wrong thing last week in Ask TDC? We're talking about, what was that, Herb?
Oh, yeah. We were talking
about arugula,
which is rocket. Yeah. And I was trying to talk about
coriander.
Which is
cilantro.
Cilantro.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I got it wrong, and we had a flood of messages about that. So apologies for saying the wrong thing in the heat of the moment, which was an unscripted ad for Budgie Smuggler.
Mm.
But it did draw more attention to the ad
and
the brand, which is, I guess, a reflection of, you know, throwing you motherfuckers off course.
Sales
have spiked.
There'll be more disagreement. Anything we do get wrong, just let us know, genuinely.
Yeah.
He goes, I think Australian under-19 teams won 4 times, not 2, so.
I think it was 1988 and 2002.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people out there, well, they'll let us know.
They'll let us know. You said the wrong thing, you'd be punished accordingly. Hey, we're about to call Bay Webster and Clive Rose. Hope they're on the show. See you guys next week.